You're listening to The Sports Rabbi, hosted by Josh Halichman.
All right, we're back with the Sports Rabbi, Josh Halichman. Welcome aboard to the Sports Rabbi Show. We bring you the best of Israeli sports all the way up north to Nahariya, down south Eilat, all the great cities in between Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, and many, many more. And of course, if you like this podcast, we are on episode number 350 of this run. Yes, number 350, which means the Sports Rabbi chooses the guest. So we have a great guest coming on today. And of course, it is none other than Tyler Dunn. He has an amazing website. If you're an NFL football fan, you will love it. Code GoLongTD.com. He has a great book as well. It just came out called The Blood and Guts, How Tight Ends Save Football. And if you like these types of guests, and of course, if you like our regular fare and fodder with the Israeli sports coverage, make sure you subscribe to us, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, all the great places. Check us out at The Sports Rabbi, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, SportsRabbi.com for the latest and greatest news, both in English and in Hebrew. We are the only website in Israel that delivers that to you in both languages. And make sure you download the app. Get the app both in English, both in Hebrew, App Store for iPhone, and of course, Google Play for Android. Without further ado, it is my honor and great pleasure to have one of the great football writers of our time, covers the NFL for so many years, and he's going to tell you all about what he does. It is none other than Tyler Dunn. How are you doing today, Tyler? What's going on?
I'm doing fantastic, Mr. Sports Rabbi. It is a pleasure to be here. I think we've kind of been, you know, ships passing in the night over the years. Always try to keep an eye on what's happening in your world out there in Israel. So this is awesome to connect through the miracles of Zoom and technology to talk a little NFL. It's an honor to be here, man.
Yeah, it's great. You know, with all the NFL games, of course, in London, and we had our first official NFL game in Germany this weekend. Who knows? Maybe one day we'll get an NFL game out here in Israel. I remember as a child going to an exhibition NFL game in Montreal where I grew up between the Patriots and the Pittsburgh Steelers. It was a lot of fun. It was a blast actually to be there. It was my first time ever at an NFL game. I'd been to CFL games, but NFL was just like, wow. And then, of course, I moved to New York, was a Jets season ticket holder from 1992 all the way to 2004 before we moved out to Israel. So Tyler, you put out this great new book, and we're going to just jump right into that. The Blood and Guts, How Tight Ends Save Football. It's put out by 12 Publishing. I just got it in the mail from you, of course, a couple weeks ago. I basically devoured it up over the last 2 weeks. I spent my Sabbaths, my Saturday afternoons reading this book. And it was a lot of fun.
We like to hear that. That's awesome.
That's my day where I get to sit down and I can read real books, real hard copy books. So that is what I love to do on Saturday afternoons. And that's exactly what I did with your book. And really, Tyler, you've been covering the NFL since, I believe, 2007. You've been working for a number of outlets, Bleacher Report, Buffalo News, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Your writing has been acknowledged by so many different great institutions. You're one of a kind. I believe you're in Western New York. Why write a book about the tight ends? Why was this going to be your first book out of everything? You could have picked quarterbacks. You could have picked wide receivers. We saw a number of good ones in that Buffalo Bills, Minnesota Vikings game. You could have picked running backs, offensive linemen. I don't know if they were so sexy, or kickers. Why tight ends?
You know, I wanted to write a book, and I just felt it was time to dive headfirst into a project that really consumes your life. Because everybody told me, look, if you're going to write a book, you better love it. You better have a passion for the topic, because it is at the forefront of your brain every second of every day, as right up to that manuscript deadline, and then obviously the editing process after that. So I just kind of started there. Like, I wanted to write about the purity of football. I've been around the game my entire life, having played it at a young age, covered it, you know, my entire adult life. Love real football. I think what appeals to me about the sport is the fact that it's just not for everybody. There's an inherent violence. There's an inherent risk. Like, when you put on the shoulder pads and the helmet and you step into that arena, I mean, we're talking about modern day gladiators here. Like there's an attrition to the sport in general. Like at a young age, when you play, you realize if this is for you or not. And it kind of not that there's anything wrong with it, but it's just different than every other sport, right? You're risking your body. You're risking your brain. It's everything. I mean, when you step onto that field and you know, engage in a little Oklahoma drill or a little bull in the ring at a young age, we've all kind of been in that moment where, okay, this is unlike any sport, and really it's unlike any profession, because when you get to the NFL and you have the best of the best of the best and you've got these modern day gladiators, just consider the life of an NFL player, right? Like a training camp practice. You wake up in the morning, you go to work, you say hi to your coworkers, you put on pads, you put on your helmet, and then you just beat the hell out of each other for 3 hours. And you might get into a fight. You might be throwing some punches. And then you go back in the locker room, you take your pads off, and you slip into the cold tub and talk about each other's families. Like, it's just, it's not normal. It's a little strange. So it starts there. Like, okay, how do you tell the story of this profession, this game, that's so unique? And it wasn't a specific player. It wasn't a specific team. What really kind of made the light bulbs go off is when I started to look at positions and realized, okay, the tight end, you've got to do everything. You've got to block in the trenches. Mm-hmm. You've got to get your hands dirty, take on a 295-pound defensive end with, you know, 8% body fat. And then when it's 3rd and 8 and the game's on the line and you've got 70,000 screaming fans in the stadium and millions more watching around the world, you've got to make that catch down the seam. Like, it has the element of grit and grime, yet also the element of like glitz and glam. You've got to do everything. So I just thought that would lend itself to some banana stories, just mass insanity with the greatest personalities in the game. I mean, you got Gronk and Kittle and Kelsey and, you know, Gonzalez and Shockey, all these wild dudes. So I just kind of set off and traveled the country to hang out with these guys in person, to see what makes them tick, see how they do tell the story of pro football. And honestly, it kind of took on a life of its own, where the book, as you kind of read, it's far more than just the tight end position. And I think it's even bigger than the game itself.
Mm-hmm. You know, you outline in the book, of course, I believe 15 different tight ends. Each chapter focuses on a different player. Some, you know, from all different eras, of course. Mike Ditka is number one, which I would say I'd have to put Mike Ditka number one as well. Jackie Smith, number two, for example. Go all the way to Kittle at 15. How did you determine which 15 players you were going to analyze? Some you were able to interview, some you weren't able to interview. How did you determine who the 15 guys were going to be? I didn't see my man Kyle Brady on this list, of course, as a Jets fan. He would have been my choice as a tight end. And he was good for a couple seasons. But, like, you know, how do you determine who's in the book? You know, you look at some guys like Jay Novacek, Mark Bavaro. I mean, those are, you know, big-time tight ends, right? Guys with multiple Super Bowls under their belt. You know, how did you determine these were going to be your 15 guys?
Totally. I mean, it's subjective, you know, 100%. I get the argument for any tight end that isn't profiled in the book. No doubt about it. I think it's just a matter of trying to, I guess, really, yeah, we're telling the story of the tight end and how it evolved from mm-hmm. Mike Ditka and John Mackey basically creating the position. I mean, the tight end didn't even exist before Ditka. You had your split ends and your ends, and Ditka was just so dominant as a receiver. Like, that term just kind of entered the pro football lexicon. So I wanted to take it from that point to today with a George Kittle who does everything. So, mm-hmm. yeah, you're telling the story of the tight end, but I think you're telling the story of the game itself too. You get a sense for every single era and every type of NFL player from Ditka to today, where, yeah, back then there were no rules. I mean, mm-hmm. guys are clotheslining each other. And, like, you know, I think the rule book was probably the size of a brochure. Like, you could just basically do whatever you wanted to. But at the same time, I mean, you watch some of these Ditka and Mackey clips, and the people that they're running over, they look like me, right? They're 5'10", you know, a buck 90, and they might be, you know, your milkman on the side or your shoemakers during the week. It does not look like the absolute physical specimens of today, where George Kittle has to block a Chandler Jones, who looks like a Marvel character with go-go gadget arms. So it's different. I think to go, get from that start of the modern, I mean, that's modern football. The 1960s is really when the NFL surpassed Major League Baseball as like America's number one sport. I mean, the ratings justify it to today through the tight end. So what goes into that? I think it is a mixture, right? I think you do want to get the big names. And I tried to hang out in person with as many of the big name tight ends as I possibly could. Really only Kellen Winslow and Shannon Sharpe were the guys I wasn't able to meet in person, but it kind of forces you to talk to a zillion people in their lives. Right. And I think we learn a lot about those players through the eyes of a Dan Fouts and through the eyes of, you know, God, with Kellen Winslow, you got Wes Chandler and Hank Bauer and Sharpe, Anthony Lynn, Terrell Davis, Mike Shanahan, Les Steckel. So I think they definitely were able to break down what made those tight ends special. And yeah, you just kind of figure out like, what is that evolution as you're going from that point A of, you know, there's no rules, you can do whatever you want, but you know, it's not exactly physical specimens out there to today. Who are the tight ends that best kind of take the reader through these, what, 6-7 decades of pro football? And it's just up to me, right? So I get the arguments. Like, I would have loved to have gotten Travis Kelce. I mean, he would have been fantastic. For whatever reason, I didn't have any luck there. But, I mean, we do have George Kittle as the new standard. And that's subjective too, right? I just feel like Kittle is everything that the tight end position is because he mauls you, he physically beats you down, and he can make the plays down the field, and he's got a pretty captivating story himself.
Of course, Wander with Tyler Dunn, The Blood and Guts, How Tight Ends Save Football. Great website. We'll get to in a little bit. GoAlongTD.com. Which chapter or which personality was the favorite one that you walked away and said, wow, this was just, you know, mind-boggling, mind-blowing? Was it somebody along the lines like Mike Ditka, who is like just, you know, this person that we've, you know, legend. He's a legend in any way you want to cut it. Or was it somebody like Jeremy Shockey where you're, you know, this is exactly what you expected, or Gronkowski, or, you know, who was that guy?
Oh, man, there were so many moments. There really were. I mean, you almost have to pinch yourself when you're hanging out with Mike Ditka at his golf course and he's got a stogie right there, right? Like here is the silhouette logo for the NFL itself. I mean, he is Jerry West. If you were to create a logo for the NFL, it is Iron Mike Ditka. So that was pretty damn cool. And I didn't really know the details on how his life was falling apart when he was in Philly in between the Bears days and the Cowboy days. He was a Philadelphia Eagle and he was down. He was depressed. He was frankly drunk all the time and his life was crumbling. And it took a phone call from Tom Landry to basically save his life and keep him playing football. And he gets to Dallas and everything kind of changes from there. So yeah, I mean, Ditka definitely popped, but it's probably Jeremy Shockey, right? I mean, he is.
It was clear that chapter you were just having a blast.
Right. I mean, that's why I didn't want the book to be research based or phone call based. I feel like if you're going to really tell the story of the game through the eyes of the tight ends, you've got to get into their world. And Jeremy Shockey's world is a bar. Like, it just is. I mean, from high school to college to the pros, he's been in more bar fights than he can count. He was almost incensed that I've never been in a fight. He could not believe it. And it starts from there. Like, I mean, he relived a fight, as you know, like from he's going to be a senior in high school and some dude at a bar just throws a bottle at his head and he avoids it like the Matrix. And then just pummels the ever-living crap out of this guy. So he's reenacting that whole scene, like, exactly as he did then, at a bar, like, ducking his head, reliving it all. Then onto the U, you know, Miami. He really re-injected a toughness, a swagger back into that university that they had a decade prior. I mean, he was in the eye of the storm in practice, just getting into brawls all the time. And same thing with the Giants, day one of training camp. He's him and Brandon Short are rolling around. It's like he was Mike Ditka, you know, two or three eras later, where he basically announced to everybody that he is at the top of the food chain. This is his domain, and he's gonna beat you up if you get in his way. And he's gonna have his teammates back. He's gonna work harder than anybody, and that's probably what surprised me as much as anything. I think I definitely had an image of Jeremy Shockey as that that party boy, right? Dating Tara Reid and all the models in New York City on the back of the tabloids, all of that. That's all true. I mean, but he never let it affect what mattered most. I mean, he almost felt like guilty if he was out drinking or partying and would wake up in the middle of the night and bang out 50, 70 pushups. He made sure if he had an off day, he was getting a hyperbaric treatment, which hyperbaric chambers, nobody even heard of him at the time. He's the one who kind of pushed it into the mainstream. Frankly, he said, like, yeah, all these girls he saw me with, I might have been out with them, but I'm not exactly dating them. He never had a girlfriend in the NFL. I mean, he saw teammates, you know, cheating on their wives and getting in all these problems off the field, and it would affect their play. He's like, I never just wanted to have a girlfriend, let alone a wife, to let it affect what mattered most. And that was fighting for my team, fighting for my brothers. And I think that he just lived like there was no tomorrow, partied like there was no tomorrow, played like there was no tomorrow. And that's everything that the NFL tight end represents. Because lo and behold, in Buffalo, New York, there's a 12, 13-year-old Rob Gronkowski who could not get enough of Jeremy Shockey, right? I mean, he writes him a letter. He sends it to the facility. He says, you are my hero. And Rob Gronkowski basically takes everything that Jeremy Shockey represented, stuffs it into a cannon and lights the fuse, and he's the greatest tight end ever.
Were you surprised at how well these players opened up their world to you? That how, you know, how good they were? And it just seems clear that the people that you did speak to, that they just, you know, they were more than happy to cooperate in this project.
And that's what was so freaking cool. I didn't know what to expect, honestly, right? Because, you know, I've got this project. I'm writing this book. I want to hang out with these tight ends. But do they even want to have any part of this, right? Like, they're on TV. They've got jobs. They've got lives. Like, you know, there were a lot of documentaries and a lot of long-form stories written before about these guys. So that was the challenge, is somehow writing this book in a way that was fresh. I didn't want to just regurgitate what's already out there. And so to get fresh stuff, like back to our point earlier, you've got to get into their world. You've got to get them to open up. And honestly, that's how I approach everything at Go Long, you know, my site, golongtd.com, where I'm writing these features and I want to have conversations, not interviews, right? I want to treat these people as human beings, not sources or NFL players. I think when you really approach it through that lens and you're just inside of Ben Coates' home in North Carolina, he's got a dip of chew in and you're just kind of bullshitting about the good old days, or you're with Tony Gonzalez down in Austin, Texas, and right, that's kind of his world, the Soho House, this upscale like social club. You're going to get a guy to actually have a conversation. It's not going to be like reporter in the face and spewing cliches back and forth. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants to hear what we've heard a million times over from these guys. So I think that they genuinely were all about the project of like telling the story of the great American red-blooded tight end and what it means to the sport. And they've got just crazy stories to share that kind of feed into it. You know, Gonzalez stunned me probably as much as anybody because, you know, he's a really polished broadcaster.
Right.
He was in the NFL forever, right? The longevity that he had, never missing a game, is just insane.
It's quite amazing. And it really is. That's just absolutely crazy.
And yet he was as real as it gets. I mean, he's dropping F-bombs left and right and talking about the time where him and Mike Mularkey almost went to blows and beat each other up in the locker room, his own coach. I thought that Tony Gonzalez, I mean, even back to like in college when he was haunted by a ghost, right? Like there's a woman died at his place before that he found out after the fact, just haunting him, just wreaking havoc at night. I couldn't believe the amount of stories that Tony Gonzalez had over the 4 or 5 hours we hung out.
Have you been surprised, Tyler, at the reception the book has gotten? Is it better than you expected? Is it what you expected? Is it more or less? You know, you've been on numerous podcasts, of course. The ratings on the book is very good. You know, it's not going to be one of the top selling books, of course.
Right.
I heard you on Jeff Perlman's show, for example. Jeff Perlman puts out a book. He's going to be a New York Times bestseller.
That son of a beat.
Right. Tyler Dunn's not going to be on the New York Times bestseller list for whatever you should be, but you won't be. But, you know, how have you felt with the book coming out and the reception you've gotten from people? Obviously peers and other players and and just the general public. I mean, again, from what I've seen, it's just been great.
Yeah, I'm just thrilled that it's been out a month. And anecdotally, I've been hearing back from just a ton of people who, like you, just ripped through it, you know, in a few days. I mean, that's awesome, whether it's hardcover, Kindle, Audible, you know, wherever, however you read or consume this book. That's what's blowing me away as somebody who's got about 15 books on my nightstand, right? That I
have been
putting up.
So do I.
That's not even getting to the Kindle. That's what's so cool, just to know that once people dig into this, look, granted, you're going to see the cover of the book and you see tight ends and you think, do I really want to read about tight ends? Once people get in, I think they are seeing that it's so much bigger than the tight end position and even so much bigger than the game. When you've got Dallas Clark, you know, reliving that moment, his mother dies in his arms and how that basically set the course for his life. And it's hard for him to go to that place to say, like, am I even in the NFL? Am I even playing in college? Am I anything at all if I don't go through that trauma, right? That's a hard cause and effect to make psychologically. I feel like the book is as much about the human condition as it is about the position or the sport itself. So, yeah, I think it's going to be reaching like totally different silos of people, right? Football fans, tight end fans, mm-hmm. sports fans. So, you know, I think there's a whole psychology realm here that will find the book really, really fascinating. And over time, I think that folks will really enjoy it. And you're right. Hey, I going in, I knew it wasn't an expose or, you know, some future New York Times smash hit, but that's totally fine with me. I tell you what, I poured my heart and soul into this. I worked really hard and I'm super happy with the final product. And it's just great to hear, you know, what's cooler than everything. I've been sitting on these stories forever, right? These crazy stories, Gronk and Kittle and Clark and Jimmy Graham. I'm just glad that other people can hear them now more than anything. Like, I've just been so excited and giddy, like, to hear about these tight ends, everything they've been through. It's just so cool that other people can kind of share in that. So, yes, thank you to everybody out there for adding the blood and guts, how tight ends save football to your library. Let's keep this momentum going. It's unbelievably appreciated.
Of course, we'll have a link to purchase the book on this post, so you can just click that and buy the book as well. We're on here with Tyler Dunn, author of The Blood and Guts, How Tight Ends Save Football. But Tyler has a whole other business than just the book. He has an exceptional website, golongtd.com. He's been in the world of the NFL since 2007. So talk a little bit about how you got into that world and how you evolved, just like the tight end, to get to where you are today with this Substack type of publication.
Yeah. You know, I've written at newspapers, at websites. I've been in this business, honestly, as long as I can remember. It just felt like the right time to take a chance, to bet on myself, and just see where it goes. I loved it at the Buffalo News covering the Bills, and I loved it at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel covering the Packers, and then Bleacher Report just gave me such a nationwide kind of presence to cover the league as a whole, where I'm parachuting into all of these different markets and telling long form stories. And that's kind of where I started to think, okay, this is absolutely what I love doing more than anything. It's sitting down with a player, it's getting into his world and telling a story that takes, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7,000 words. You know, it might be a little longer than what people are used to. I wanted to kind of zag where everybody else is zigging. I mean, I'm sure it's similar out there with sports media coverage, but I mean, here it's fast food. It's tweets and takes and memes and gifs and BS.
It's the same thing. I hear you. It's one of the big frustrations that you can't really dig into a topic or subject, but I guess with the Substack, golongtd.com, you're able to do that. Not just, you know, you put out podcasts, you have, you know, every week at the end of every, you know, week of games, you have your summary, but then there's also all those Q&As and the columns and the features, and you have other shows and the special, you know, the specials that come out with you also. I mean, I just printed out a ton of your Q&As so I can read them on, you know, Saturday afternoons, or even don't tell anybody, but even sometimes in synagogue Saturday morning, I may whip out one of those when it gets a little bit boring. But you know, they're just amazing Q&As. And, you know, if it's Rob Johnson, for example, I it's fascinating, right? Or if it's Frank Wycheck, which is one of your more recent ones, it goes, you know, there's just amazing stuff that you get to put out. And you're talking about some of these pieces are 3,000-5,000 words. Edgerrin James, Ryan Leaf, for example, or a couple other people, Trent Dilfer. You know, these are all guys I just printed out because I need to have extra, you know, extra copy and extra stuff to read in hardcover and in hard copy, because that's me. I enjoy doing that the most. So, you know, I guess that is one of the great things about your site, is that you're really giving the fan, you know, real inside look, and you're accessing people that are legends in their own right, or they've made an impact on the game one way or another.
I appreciate that, man. Thanks so much. I think that's absolutely the goal. It's just go the other direction, right? If everybody else, or most everybody else, is just trying to spit stuff out in real time and not really take that deep breath to understand the how and the why behind a final score or behind, you know, whatever your fantasy football players did that Sunday. I'd love to go that other direction and just really get to know these players as people. And I think that there's kind of two elements to it where, yeah, I'm doing, you know, the Q&As and the profiles on these individual players to understand what makes them tick and to tell their unbelievable stories. But there's also the stories on the inner workings of a team, right, and what kind of happens behind the scenes. Because mm-hmm. I do feel like, even though there's more coverage of the NFL than ever before, we don't really understand how the NFL works, because mm-hmm. teams are so guarded and players are so coached up on what to say and how to say it, that when you know what hits the fan with a team or a situation, like, we don't really know what happened. And so I'm willing to kind of, like, you know, get the hands a little dirty, bring it back to these tight ends, right? The grit and the grime, and figure out what happened. And I mean, the New York Giants, for example, when everything was falling apart last mm-hmm. year, I got to know a lot of the scouts that were fired by Dave Gettleman and that regime. And they were willing to talk and kind of explain just how bad it is behind the scenes. And lo and behold, everybody got fired and they hire new people and they're winning games. So things worked out for the Giants. But I think that kind of story is lost in NFL coverage today. Just with how beats are, and, you know, I think I'm going to sound like an old curmudgeon. I'm 35 years old, but, you know, there's a lot of young reporters today that I think would rather pander to their Twitter audience than actually, you know, get their hands dirty and see what's wrong with the situation. So that creates a lane for go along as well.
You know, there were so many great stories that I've read over, you know, over time. If it's the whole analysis you had of the New York Giants, Jerry's World, for example, that could be a, you know, talking about, you know, one of the great owners in the game, you know, Jerry Jones. I mean, that was just an incredible analysis of somebody that that is, bar none, one of the most colorful characters in the game of football, Tyler.
Oh, man, thanks a lot. Yeah, there's probably about a dozen more parts that could go to that three-part story, right? It's just in the impetus for that is, okay, here's this team that makes more money than any sports franchise in the entire world, yet they go 25, going on 26, going on 27 years without a championship, without even getting to the NFC Championship game. It blows my mind, and I think that really when you kind of dive into, okay, this isn't normal. Jerry Jones owns the team, and he's the general manager, and he's the president, and he's constantly making personnel decisions. Like, what is this world really like? And yeah, thankfully some people were willing to talk about it and share just how terrible the environment is. And I mean, it's great. They make a lot of money, right? The bottom line's there. They're always going to print money. But if you care about wins and losses, maybe you should get the hell out of the way if you're owning the team.
You know, the last few minutes we have with you here, Tyler, where do you see the NFL going? You know, it's commercial wise, it's just, you know, tremendous. It's a tremendous enterprise. There's no question. The TV deals are worth billions and billions and billions of dollars. The expansion of the league, if it's, you know, again, going to play more games overseas, there's money in all corners. Obviously, from a gambling point of view, it's, you know, it's right up there as, you know, probably the biggest sport in North America, and the most people that watch it or that are concerned about the sport because of that aspect. But where do you see, and, you know, we haven't even gone, I'm not even going to go to the whole concussion and, you know, that mm-hmm. area. That's a whole other talk for other types of people. But where is the sport of football going these days? Because right now the games that we're seeing are, you know, still top-notch games. The drama's there. The fun is there. The action is there. There's no question. Some people like the red zone. Some people like me, I want to see and watch a game from the beginning to end, which I, you know, had that privilege of watching the Bills and the Vikings, and it was just, you know, I was rewarded for that. You know, I was rewarded for that. So where's the NFL going these days?
I laugh because I live here in Buffalo, New York, and I had that same decision to make. It's like, okay, do I watch this Bills Vikings game beginning to end, or do I just dive headfirst into the shark infested waters that is the Red Zone channel? And it's like, I decided to stick with Bills and Vikings, and we were absolutely rewarded because you get the narrative flow of the ups and the downs. And I mean, you can really attach yourself emotionally to the story of a game. I'm with you. I'd still rather get that. I mean, Red Zone's crazy and fun, and you get a sense for all of the games all at once, but it's a little too spastic for me. My head still spins like a top when I'm on that channel. So yeah, give me the full game if it's a good game. And here, I think that obviously the NFL business-wise is in, you know, a better place than it's ever been, and it's only going to make more money. And I do have one concern, though. I just wonder where this gambling stuff goes. I mean, they have just wrapped their arms around, you know, fantasy football is one thing, and they've been all in with fantasy football for a while, but to be sponsored by DraftKings and FanDuel and just push people to place bets constantly. I get it. You're going to make a lot of money. There's a lot of money to be had there, but I think you're wrong. I think, you know, number one, your own players, you know, are one or two clicks away from gambling on games. Mm-hmm. And Calvin Ridley, you know, he gets suspended a year. I promise you there's way more Calvin Ridleys out there that are placing bets. And even if they're not betting on their own team, I just think as the public learns about the participants getting involved with gambling, you run the risk of damaging the public trust. And the NFL hasn't had to deal with that since, you know, the 1960s when Paul Hornung and whether it was Alex Karras that they were suspended for gambling. It's been a bit since they had to worry about this stuff. And, you know, it's so easy to place a bet. I think that when you take the risk of that public trust, and that's going to hurt the product. If they have more instances and people are thinking, oh, is the game I'm watching that pure, right? Is this really what's happening?
Right.
If any of that takes off, that could hurt the product, let alone the fact of just the moral dilemma. I mean, people's lives are ruined from gambling. I mean, there's so many horror stories out there of just people just losing everything on a game. So here's the NFL telling you, oh, hey, you know, here's, take advantage of this bet and that bet. And then they give you free money to kind of entice you and keep you in. It's like they're like drug dealers, basically.
Yeah. We've had this in Europe. You have, you know, the betting in stadiums and stuff has been there for years. It's, you know, for America, this is something totally new where it's so accessible. I mean, I go to a basketball game and there is a guy sitting in the press box with us on an iPad, literally doing every little play on that to go straight to the betting lines. And he's working for betting companies. I mean, I see this all the time. Doesn't matter if it's Israeli league, Euro league, whatever it is. And there could be multiple people like that in the press box. It's you know, I'd say, who is that? I've never seen that guy here before. Like, where is he writing for? And he says, oh, they're not writing for anybody. And they're with the gambling companies. So I was like, oh, man, like, what's going on here? Oh, man.
I know it. And I probably sound like a prude. I get it. But it just is like, God, I mean, I got to think people in the front offices and coaching staffs. I mean, there's prop bets for the first play of a game or bets on who the first player to get drafted will be. You can't tell me that people involved, the people who actually make the sausage, are, you know, wetting their feet when they have the opportunity. So the NFL doesn't seem to care about the ramifications there. And maybe they're right. Right. Maybe I'm wrong to even be suspicious, and they'll just keep printing money and nobody will give a damn.
Got to talk about Shoeless Joe Jackson. Maybe we can bring what happened.
Yes, there we go.
Back in the White Sox scandal, the Black Sox scandal. So Tyler, where can people reach out to you? You know, and of course, just, you know, give us a plug for all your stuff.
Hey, thanks so much. Yep. GoLongTD.com. That's just my initials, TD, Tyler Dunn. and touchdown, I suppose. But you could pop on there, just plug your email in to subscribe. Two options. You can sign up for free and you get some of the stories and, you know, free preview posts on the paid content, or you can just upgrade. It's $8 a month, $50 a year to get everything we have to offer. So all the long form, humanizing profiles, podcasts. Also do a show with Isaiah McKenzie, the Bills slot receiver, which is a lot of fun. We'll have the fifth episode up here later today. But yeah, I absolutely love, you know, introducing people from around the globe. We've got some subscribers from Singapore and London and Ireland and Scotland. It's awesome to just see the NFL interest everywhere. So if we can get an Israel presence.
I got to get on that happy hour one of these days.
Yes. Yeah, we got to fire those back up, baby. We got to make those happen. It'll be a weird hour of the day for you, but we would appreciate it.
I know, you know, as long as I'm up, I'll be there. Tyler Dunn, honor and a pleasure. The Blood and Guts, How Tight End Save Football. You'll have the links on, of course, the Sports Rabbi website, and enjoy it. It was an honor to have you on here for the 350th show of the Sports Rabbi podcast. So thanks for coming on board, Tyler, today. I appreciate it.
Oh, my God. Oh, the pleasure was all here, man. Love the conversation. Hoping to do it again soon.